Mr. Cantor. And with that, we will move to item five, Dear Licenses.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, Commissioners, Secretary Roebling. Andy Lindblom here, Senior Big Game Biologist out of Rapid City. And with me today is Byron Buckley, who's also Senior Big Game Biologist out of Rapid City. So today we're here to provide an overview on management of deer populations in South Dakota and provide some updates on the status. And what I want to cover today, first I'm going to start off with a historical perspective. Then we're going to dive into some of our biological data. Then we're going to talk about some of our social data. We're going to talk about unit objectives. And we're going to get to our population modeling. And ultimately, we're going to talk about where our populations are right now and what the trend is of our different herds in the state. All right. We are up and moving here. Sorry for the delay. All right. So I'm going to start off with a historical perspective. Looking back to 2000 to present, I broke it into two different time periods. The first one is when we really had overabundant deer populations. We were above objective in almost all of our deer units, and we were doing everything we could. What's that?
Your presentation.
You need it?
Yep.
I don't have it. In my backpack.
Where's your backpack?
It's back there. I think John can show you where it is, front pocket. Careful what you pull out. All right. Sorry for the interruption there, but looking at two different time periods, one when we had too many deer and one when we don't have enough deer. And I'm going to talk about the regulations that you as a commission, we as a department, passed during those time periods to address those situations. So the first one here from 2000 to about 2010, again, we were overabundant in our deer populations in almost every deer unit. So obviously we increased our license numbers. We increased our two tags. We had very few areas with single tag licenses. And we also added a three tag license. And that third tag in that license was actually free, and it was a doe tag. And you can see the license changes there. From about 2000 to about 2010 there, the tag numbers, we had over 200,000 deer tags back in the peak of our deer population. So we had a lot of hunting opportunity out there. Some of you may recall during the same time period, we used to issue archery, youth, and muzzleloader antlerless licenses at the unit level, and they were all limited draw. We changed that. We made them unlimited, and we made them statewide season. And we saw a big bump up in our harvest and our participation. To encourage people to buy more doe licenses, we reduced the doe license fees. And we also provided over-the-counter access to unsold licenses. It's hard to believe, but back then, in order to get an unsold license, you had to get it through our peer licensing office. We changed that system so you could get it through any license vendor. We added some season extensions. We added one, believe it or not, you could actually harvest deer during the pronghorn season. You could shoot a doe. We added one right after the firearm season. You could shoot does in. And we also added another one late December, early January. So we had three different seasons in addition to the regular ones where you could harvest deer. We provided free deer donation coupons to people to encourage them again to shoot more does. We had folks saying they don't want any more does. They can't eat any more does, right? We said, well, here's another outlet for more does being harvested. There definitely was a need there. At the peak of our deer population and our participation in this program, I believe in 2010, Sportsmen Against Hunger provided over 100,000 pounds of processed game meat, most of which was ground venison. Yeah. We also increased the number of licenses that a person could hold up to five in some of our seasons. We offered free antlerless deer licenses to landowners, and we added a mentored youth season. So the results were we got on top of the deer herd, we had some record harvests, and our deer populations were reduced substantially, which was obviously part of our objective, but we went beyond the objective. And there were a few reasons we went beyond the objective. Not only did we have record harvest, that didn't do it, but we also had some severe winters. We had 3 back-to-back severe winters. We had a record hemorrhagic disease outbreak in 2012. Also in 2010 and 2013, or 2011 and 2013, we saw some high EHD hemorrhagic disease. We had a record summer drought in 2012. Some of you may remember that was the one of the hardest droughts in the record of the state. And that affects forage, and that affects deer. We have less forage out there. We have deer in lower body condition. That means they have lower survival, higher predation, lower overwinter survival. They're less reproductive. And if they are reproductive and they have fawns, those fawns are lower weight. Lower weight fawns have lower survival, higher predation on lower weight fawns, higher overwinter mortality on lower weight fawns. So it just kind of added to that additional source of mortality and the population decline. And then at the same time, and we're still continuing to see some of this, substantial habitat losses. We've lost about half of our CRP since then, about 900,000 acres. Commodity prices were good at the time, so we saw a lot of conversion of our native grasslands, a lot of removal of shelter belts and important deer habitat, and wetland drainage. So what did we do to address some of the issues beginning back in 2010? Decreased license numbers, as you might imagine. We reduced our 2-tag licenses. We currently don't have any 3-tag licenses out there. You can see the reduction in tag numbers, that green line there from 2010. Again, we were over 200,000. This last year, we were at about 108,000 tags, so about half. As you imagine, we've pulled back on a lot of the things I just talked about, a lot of the actions that we took before to kill more deer or to harvest more deer. We've pulled back on those. We removed all of our archery muzzle or antlers licenses from deer units where we don't have firearm licenses or less than 50. Our archery muzzleloader, or any antlerless deer licenses were changed to antlerless whitetail, and we did that to address some of the concerns on our mule deer populations in some areas. We also modified our youth and mentor apprentice deer seasons in the same vein to address some of the concerns of lower mule deer numbers and restricted their harvest just to the northwest part of the state. We also removed a lot of our season extensions. We removed the one in pronghorn season, removed the one right after the hunting, the main firearm seasons, and we still do have one in about mid-December. We also currently are not providing any free deer donation coupons. We've decreased the number of licenses that a person can hold in some of our seasons. Youth mentor apprentice, we went from 5 down to they can only hold 1. Archery from 5 down to 3. Muzzleloader from 5 down to 2. And we began identifying unit objectives. We didn't used to do this. Now we have these objective maps that we'll talk about here today. But this is our way as an agency of being transparent with where we're trying to drive those deer populations in those units. And just a few more items here. More recently, some action that the commission has taken since 2019 due to some concerns we've heard about harvest of deer on public land. We have established a private land only license or a unit for antlerless deer. We also created the combined drawing process for the top 2 choices, and we did this because obviously when we have less licenses out there, your draw odds are reduced substantially. This does help the draw odds for your first 1 or 2 picks. It also puts some more hunters in the field. We've limited, because of some concerns about the increase in non-resident archery, and again on public land, we've limited the private and public land non-resident archery deer licenses to 2,200. In addition, we pushed their season date back. We also added an any buck license option. We haven't had that on the table for a long time for our managers. So in some of those units, we can, for firearm, we can change those to any buck instead of any deer or any whitetail deer to reduce the doe harvest. And we changed our archery and antler muzzleloader any deer licenses to any buck. And I'm being a little presumptuous here. I'm assuming that will pass. And I'm not going to go into the details, but when we do have a hemorrhagic disease loss, we do respond by removing leftover tags if we're aware of it before all those tags are removed, and we also offer voluntary license returns and refunds. So that's a quick overview of some of the action the department and you as a commission have taken to address At one time, high deer populations, and now low deer populations. And now we want to talk about some of the data we use as a department to evaluate our deer herds across the state. Not going to go into the great detail on all of these, but I do want to highlight a few important data points. Our first one is our herd composition survey. This is a preseason ground count. This last year, staff across the state classified almost 17,000 deer. And this is where we get our age and our sex ratios. So this is where we get our buck to doe and our fawn to doe ratios. So just going to focus on our age ratios because this is our estimate of recruitment, and this is really an important data point for us. This is a big determinant of how that population is going to grow. And you can see the fawn to doe ratios last year for white-tailed deer, we were at about 70. For mule deer, we were at about 63. And you can see that did drop last year for both species. And again, that's really important for us to know as an agency so we can allocate the appropriate number of licenses. Just to give you an idea on the sampling effort the staff did last year to evaluate herd composition across the state. So on your left, those are areas where we sampled mule deer herds, and on the right, those are our white-tailed deer herd counts. And we do have sampling goals within each one of our data analysis units, our DAUs. And Byron will talk a little more about what a DAU is. But we have sampling size goals, and we also have distribution goals. And you can see staff did a really good job of getting a wide distribution of samples last year. So now I want to talk about our harvest data, obviously a very important data point. Last year we harvested about 36,000 white-tailed deer. Of that, about 12,000 were does. You can see this graph here, the trend on harvest. The total harvest is the green, and the buck and doe harvest would be the red and blue lines. And again, we just talked about the years when the populations were going and we had record harvests, and that'd be during this time period. And we had over 40,000 does we harvested that one year. Mule deer, last year we harvested about 6,200, which of about 1,100 were does. And again, similar trend there. Our harvest peaked in around 2010 or so, and our populations have decreased since, and we've been in the rebuilding phase for our mule deer herd. You can see very conservative doe harvest since 2014. So we also look at harvest by hunting season, of course, and by license type. This helps us in our license allocation. So here's a lot of data. I'm not going to go over all of it, but just want to hit on a few high points. First, the different hunting seasons we have, the first column, and then our license types. And I do have a cheat sheet on license types there on the bottom right if you're wondering what all those are. But then the average doe harvest, this is for white-tailed deer from each season, and then what proportion of that total doe harvest came from that season. So just to hit on a few points here, the majority of our white-tailed doe harvest the last couple of years has come from firearm season, which we control how much and where that is. So not too terribly concerned about that. Some of that's by design. But the next two big categories would be landowner on your own land licenses and mentor youth seasons. And those, some of that harvest may be where we want it, but some of it may be where we don't want it as well. We don't have much control on where that harvest occurs because they are larger units. Same with mule deer doe harvest. Same table here. The bulk of our harvest for mule deer does is coming from that mentored youth season and landowner season and firearm seasons. And again, if we were to look to reduce harvest in an area, we may not be wanting it. We would probably want to talk about the mentored youth and the landowner seasons. Of course, we also look spatially where that harvest is occurring. Here's a couple maps looking at the youth mentor apprentice doe harvest for last year, 2025. The map on the left is the white-tailed doe harvest. The one on the right is mule deer. The darker the color, the heavier the harvest. And you see, obviously, in the Black Hills, we're harvesting quite a few does between the youth, mentored, and apprentice deer seasons. And you can see in the east, the northeast in particular, there's quite a bit of harvest from those seasons as well. Of course, mule deer doe harvest is more limited. That's the only unit where those seasons are allowed to harvest a mule deer doe. As you can see, the distribution of that. And then looking at the same type of maps, this is for landowner on your own land. This would be for landowner East River deer, landowner West River deer, and landowner Black Hills deer. Again, whitetail doe harvest on the left and mule deer doe harvest on the right, just to give you an idea of the distribution and the amount of doe harvest coming from those different seasons. So harvest is one source of mortality. Obviously, we keep track of that very closely, but we also keep track of other sources of mortality, in particular hemorrhagic disease, chronic wasting disease, and severe winters. Of course, we've been talking a lot about hemorrhagic disease lately. You guys have seen this chart, but this chart on the left is the total number of reported deer losses per year across the entire state. That's not an estimate of total deer losses. It's surely much higher than that, but it does give us an idea of the relative amount of mortality from year to year. Obviously, in 2012, when we had record harvest, we were also having record hemorrhagic disease losses, one of the highest we've recorded as an agency. But also in 2011 and 2013, again, we had some really heavy losses, actually twice of what we've seen in the last couple of years. So heavy losses to hemorrhagic disease. And you can see the maps here. The last 2 years, although statewide, the losses haven't been really substantial, they have been in a few units for sure. Chronic wasting disease is another disease we've talked about. It's a neurological disease. Once a cervid gets it, either a deer or an elk or a moose, it's always fatal. This is a distribution of the positive CWD samples that we've collected over the years for mule deer purple, white-tailed deer blue. It's not a scientific sample of random sample across the entire state, but it does give us an idea of the relative abundance or the relative prevalence of this disease in different units of the state. And it's definitely something that we need to account for when we look at allocating doe licenses. And the last source of mortality I want to talk about is from severe winters. We do calculate a winter severity index using monthly snowfall and mean monthly air temperatures, and we quantify this from November to April. So that orange line you see on the graph there, that's an average winter. And so any WSI value above that means we're getting into a severe winter, and we should expect some deer mortality. So obviously the taller that bar is, the higher mortality we have. And again, back in 2012 or 2010 area, we saw some substantial overwinter mortality from our deer herds on top of record harvests, on top of hemorrhagic disease losses. And the last thing I want to talk about as far as survival goes is since about 2015, we've captured and collared close to 5,000 deer across the state of South Dakota, looking at both whitetails and mule deer, looking at adult doe survival, and also survival of those fawns in the wintertime. And so we have some really good baseline data of deer survival, which again is really an important metric when we go to model these populations. So that's our biological data, and that's what we use, at least some of the data that we use and talk about when we assess deer herds across the state. But really, when we're talking about unit objectives and what we want to do with those deer herds in each one of our units, we're really leaning heavily on social data, right? The input we get from landowners and hunters and the general public. Of course, a lot of this has come from, you know, we've done some historical public opinion surveys. We've done some regional advisory panels. We've had stakeholder groups. We've had open houses. Of course, the commission process, you as a commission obviously hear from the public when we have too many deer and we don't have enough deer. But we also, I want to point out, we have staff, a lot of staff that live and work in these communities across the state, and they're talking with hunters and landowners and getting a pretty good feel for from a social standpoint, what our objective should be in those different units. And one of the important data points a social data point for deer occurs when we have a severe winter. So from a biological standpoint, it is a big hit on our deer. We can have some pretty heavy overwinter mortalities, but from a social standpoint, it can be a pretty big hit too, because we can really reach that social tolerance when we have decent deer populations and a hard winter. You can see here this map is Just most recently here in 2023, that's a heat map of where we had a request for services for deer depredation just a couple years ago, right? We had almost 600 requests and spent nearly $1 million on dealing with too many deer in a hard winter. Another social data point that we're starting to look at more and more, of course, as you're, I'm sure you're aware, we survey all of our hunters and during the deer seasons, and a couple years ago, we started asking the question on what do they think of the deer population in the unit they hunt on? And so we started to quantify this, and so we asked them to rate the deer population, a 1 being too low, a 2 being slightly too low, a 3 about right, 4 slightly too high, and then 5 is way too high. Not sure too many hunters are going to say they had way too many deer to chase in the field. But you get the general idea here beginning in 2022. I picked out some units. Definitely my eyes couldn't pick out the colors from all those different units. But this is just a grouping of those units we've been talking about in the southeast. And you can see the trend here. Back in 2022, there were some of them close to just about right from a hunter's perspective, but they still were closer to slightly too low, and they've all trended downward. And they're all now either slightly too low or much too low. Picked out a few West River units that we've been talking about as well here recently. Similar data in that they're all in that slightly too low and between just about right area. But not the downward trend, more of a pretty flat line there as far as trend goes. Of course, we have landowners that get licenses, and we've been asking landowners the same question. And this is the same set of East River counties and those folks that received a landowner-owned land license, what their thoughts were on deer. We did have more of them closer to the just about right as far as deer numbers go in those East River units. But again, it's all the same downward trend. They are seeing less deer on the landscape. And for those West River units, just picked out again a few of them. Again, they're a little bit closer to the just about right, but they're still, for the most part, below. For the most part, they feel that there's slightly too few deer. So this is great data. One of the challenges we have with this data set is sample size. Some of these responses may just be from literally a handful of landowners in some of our units. And we want a better sample size. What we'd ideally like is a really good sampling of all the landowners in every unit on what their thoughts were on the deer population. That would really help us with our objectives. And so this is what I want to talk about next is a future effort that's coming up. Stephanie Buckley, our human dimension specialist, is working on trying to get us a better data set of landowners so we can better inform some of our population objectives. And so she's actually went out and purchased through a third-party vendor a better list of landowners. It's really tough to get a really solid list of all of our landowners across every unit in the state. And so now we do have a much better list to pull our sample sizes from. So the next process is we'll be surveying landowners, and then we'll have a better data set again to add to our other social data for developing objectives. So really looking forward to this. I can't wait to see some of the data come out of this, because this is what we really need when we talk about social objectives. And the last thing I want to talk about before I turn it over to Byron here is our unit objectives, where we take all this stuff I just talked about and we lay out to the public what our objectives are in each one of our units. This is our desire for every unit when it comes to white-tailed deer across the state. If it's a dark blue, that means we want to substantially increase. Light blue, slightly increase. Green would be where we want to be. We're actually going to harvest does in those units and try to keep that population from getting any higher. We don't have any in the red right now where we want to decrease. But this kind of gives you an idea of what our goals are in every unit, and probably something we should spend more time talking about before we make recommendations for proposals and we talk license numbers, because this is really driving our license numbers. So that's for white-tailed deer, and then this is for mule deer. Again, similar story, a higher proportion of the unit or the units. We do want to substantially increase mule deer populations. But again, we have some that are getting closer to where we want to be, that light blue, and some, believe it or not, we have enough mule deer and we are issuing licenses to make sure we don't have more in those green units. And that's it for my part. I'm going to turn it over to Byron now to talk about population modeling and projections. Do you want the computer?
We can just leave it right there. I'll just take that thing. Good afternoon, Madam Chair, Commissioner, Secretary Roblin, Byron Buckley, Senior Wildlife Biologist out of the Rapid City office. So my job here today is kind of to put a capstone on the bridge that Andy's been building. So much of my job has been or is population estimates for big game. So deer are one of the big ones that we work with. Andy did mention DAUs or data analysis units. So we did some research to figure out exactly how can we better break up the state to figure out exactly how many deer we have on the landscape. So we have basically these deer management units. They're congregated into what we're calling DAUs. So these are similar habitats, similar climatic conditions, and demographic characteristics in these DAUs. You might ask, why don't we do it specifically in the deer management units? Andy said earlier, statistics. So some of these areas do not have the numbers that we need to effectively say, yes, these are definitively happening or these are not definitively happening. So we need to have more reliable data. So to do that, we congregate these deer management units, which gives us a lot more statistical power to say this is biologically happening or not. So how we manage or how we estimate deer populations across the state, we use what's called a harvest reconstruction model or a statistical reconstruction model. So a lot of the information that Andy talked about goes into this model. The easiest way that I think about this is that we take the harvest survey results that we get and then we back build the population. So we're looking at survival, we're looking at recruitment, and in some places we have abundance, such as in the northeastern portion of the state, we have aerial surveys done every 4 years, and then in the Black Hills we have spotlight counts. But the heavy lifter for this model is the harvest surveys that we get back. So at the end of every season, we send out these harvest reports or these harvest surveys. A few months later, we get reports back. GFMP staff works really hard to put this data together to give us the harvest reports. So I put in here just as a quick example to give you all an idea of what we do with these harvest reconstruction. So in this scenario, season's already done. We've already sent out the surveys. We've already got the surveys back. So in this survey, we have 50 does shot, 50 bucks shot. And then we take those numbers and divide those by the harvest rate for bucks and does separately. In, excuse me, in this scenario, we have about 192 bucks and then 833 does. But we're not finished with figuring out exactly how many deer we have on the landscape. So we have to look at the fawns. So to do this, we look at what Andy talked about earlier, the herd composition information. GFMP staff go out across the state and put in some really good time and really good information to come up with how many fawns per doe we have on the landscape. So in our scenario here, we have about 86 fawns per 100 does. So we take that number, multiply that by 833, that gives us 717 fawns. And then we add all those together to get about 1,700 deer on our mythical landscape. So this is very rudimentary, so we do a lot more information, a lot more modeling with deer. So we put in our survival estimates, we put in winter severity, we put in potential if we have an EHD outbreak, how is this impacting our population? So this gets us to a general number known as lambda. So how is our population doing? So is it growing or is it decreasing or is it maintaining? So lambda of one means that the population is fairly stable. It's not growing or decreasing. Anything below one, the population is generally decreasing. If it's above one, we're increasing. And so we can take our harvest reconstruction information And looking at this Leslie matrix, we can kind of see where we're at with how our population is doing. So if you look on the far right, this is a great year. We're having a lot of fawn recruitment. So generally speaking, we could have a little bit higher harvest in this scenario if we have really good survival. On the far left, if we don't have good fawn recruitment, we're going to have to back off significantly in these areas. So this just kind of gives us a matrix to where we can kind of judge where we're sitting with our population reconstruction models. And we also have one for mule deer. You can see that they're not as prolific as whitetail, so it's a little bit different with the fawn to doe ratio and a little bit different with the harvest ratio on the far left there. So we take all of this information, which builds our confidence in our management decisions for either putting more licenses on the ground or taking licenses off the ground. And this gets to what Andy was talking about with our population objectives. So in 2024, we were estimating about 400,000 whitetail in the landscape, so at about a 9% growth rate. And in mule deer, we're about 115,000, so about a 5% growth rate. So I wanted to kind of drill down on some of these areas after we've done our harvest reconstruction models. So this would be DAU-8 down in the southeastern portion of the state. So the gray bar has kind of already happened in this scenario here. So that is, we did see some EHD outbreak down there, so our population is going down in those areas. And the great thing about using this harvest reconstruction model is we can predict out what we think is going to happen in the future. So if we think we're going to have more EHD outbreaks, which is that little blue dotted line going down, we're going to lose about 3,000-ish deer to that scenario. If we have no EHD outbreak or no severe winters, so under a perfect scenario, we have normal survival, we have no EHD, we have no severe winters, our population under our current regime of tag allocations, our population should be growing at about 8%. So that's about 7,000 deer being added to the environment. And I put in this green line, which is absolutely no harvest, which would be if everything just a catastrophe happened and we needed to do that, we would only be putting 14,000 more deer on the landscape. So if similar areas, similar DAU in the southeast, so the same kind of scenario as well, we would continue to decrease if we see these EHD outbreaks or a severe winter. If we have normal harvest or normal harvest with normal recruitment along with normal survival, we should see an increase again in that population in the southeast. As well, if we don't have any doe harvest, we're going to go up a little bit higher. So I put in here mule deer for the northwest portion of the state. You can see that the population should be continually growing because we're not seeing those potential those EHD outbreaks. Mule deer do not inhabit the same areas as whitetail with in those muddy, wet areas where the midges typically are. So we're not seeing the decline in the mule deer population and not seeing any disease impacts that we know of right now. So in the northwest portion of the state, we should be seeing about a 7% growth under our current harvest tag allocation. Very similar in the southwestern portion of the state, unit DAU-4. It'll be a little bit slower growing first off, but it's going to pick up. Generally speaking, at about 10% growth rate at around the 2029 year. And so that is all we have. I know that's a lot of information, and if there's any questions, love to answer.
Very good. Lots of information. Questions, comments from the commission at this time? Commissioner Spring.
This is Commissioner Spring. I was, with the drought that's going on in most of western South Dakota, drought years are usually high EHD death rates. In my area in Meade County, even with the drought last year with EHD, with fawn survival was little to none. Very few survived. With EHD, it knocked the herd down farther. It's lucky on my ranch if we even have 5% of the whitetails that we had 10 years ago or 6 years ago. There's many areas that are that way. And there's some areas along the rivers where there's running water. Yeah, it's fine there. But there's huge areas that when you have such a small herd and you still have the coyotes take a terrible toll on them. If you got 100 fawns a year and the coyotes eat 25, you don't notice it. But when you only got 20 does and 15 fawns, the coyotes still eat. I don't really have the answer to it, but I would like to see in those dark areas that you have in the state that we would go with just a buck license. I don't care if there's only 2%, 5% does killed in those units. That's 2 and 5% too many. Our mule deer herd is starting to come back where the whitetail is really down. I foresee mule deer fawns and does being killed. And I'd like to just see a buck only. If we're going to have in those units that are really bad, I think we should just have a buck license. That's my proposal. I don't know what the rest of you think, but that's where I'm at. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Any comments from the both of you before we move on to other questions?
Yeah, Madam Chair, Commissioner Spring, I certainly don't disagree with you and a lot of the comments you made, and of course a lot of our data sets are at the larger unit level. We're not necessarily going to drill down to every farm and ranch in the unit. So certainly some of those issues can be occurring. And obviously, if there's desire from the commission to further change those licenses, you have a recommendation in front of you right now, but I'm sure additional changes can be made.
Very good. Comments, questions from the commission. Commissioner Cole.
Yeah, I would like to say that, I'm actually excited for once to hear what you biologists are doing. I'm excited about this. I get some grins, that's good. I think the thing that I've really seen, being a non-biologist, but have a pretty good pulse on the hunters, especially in the area that we're talking about and the landowners, I like hearing what you're talking about, getting more one-on-one contact. The thing you mentioned about getting a third party to go out and get more information from the landowners is great. I think the conservation officers, and I know you've got a lot of input from them, especially in this area we're talking about. I think that's really vital, and I think it gets back to what Commissioner Springs is saying too. I think the more we treat these units as counties, because that's really the way the vast majority of those rifle licenses are sold, and that's our big number, as we all know. I think the more we can get a better read on it. But I'm in support of what you're proposing now and the way it looks, and I'm glad that we've looked at the science and the social aspect of it, and I think we've done due diligence and we're on the right track at least. I would be remiss not to remind everybody that those numbers showed 100,000 less deer 20 years ago being shot or harvested or licenses given, whichever the number was. That's drastic. And I still see a little bit when we talk about percentage of increase, we're talking about an East River or a West River or a whitetail or mule deer. I think those numbers need to be a lot more specific, and I hate to use the word micromanage, but I think that's kind of what it has to be. Just my two cents worth, and hopefully we can take care of some of these problems as we go, and I think we have them in spotted areas, but overall, we're on the right track.
Thank you, Commissioner. Other comments from the commission? Commissioner Teal.
Thank you. Commissioner Teal, just wanted to thank you guys for putting that together. That was a really good presentation, and I think with those future population models, not just for us, but for the public too, just to see that there is a little bit bigger picture in sight. It's not trying to keep harvest the same and just for no reason. It's because populations are trending upward in some of those units. So I just wanted to take a second to thank you guys. That was a great, great presentation.
Thank you, Commissioner. Other comments, questions from the commission? I do want to clarify, Commissioner Spring, you mentioned a proposal. Are you formally proposing that you want to see a change, or is this more for conversation as a whole?
I'd like to put it up a proposal, like on the maps there, when you had the dark colored units, that the numbers are way down. Would it be possible? I mean, there isn't some kind of statute against it. Could we have bucks only in those units? I think that might help. I don't have the real answer to this, but I'm grasping to try to find a way to bring a herd back. And I would despise if anybody drove onto my place and shot a doe, because I'm just scared that one more year of EHD, I might not have a whitetail left. And we had hundreds before. And it just scares me. I'd like to see if that would work. If it would work for a proposal, I'm for it. I don't know what the rest of the commissioners think, but that's where I'm at.
I would like to offer this. We are going to be finalizing some license numbers today, so if we could get some guidance perhaps from the Secretary or the Director of Wildlife as to what's in front of us.
Yeah, Madam Chair, thank you for that. As far as the request here from Commissioner Springs, I think a lot of the request is actually being conducted in the license allocation that we have before you today. I think it'd be prudent for the staff, Tom, to come up and Andrew to come up and share those license recommendations that we are going to be presenting to you, because we did make some adjustments. We did look at reducing some antlerless harvest in those units that are dark blue on that map, so we can grow the population faster. One thing to realize and recognize is we do feel like we are slowly growing the population, slowly. Now, if we have 100 deer there year one, we'll have 108 deer there year two. We'll have 117 deer there year three. We'll have 126 deer there year four. And in year five, 5 years after the growth rate, when we start with 100 deer, we still only have 136 deer. It's a slow growth, but we are growing. And I think that's something to really remember here throughout this entire conversation. Is it as fast as we'd like? No. But those years then, we do see good recruitment. That growth rate should improve and increase. Those models can go one way or another very easily. And we are worried about drought and EHD. There's no doubt about that. But we are trying to be proactive with our license allocation that we have here today. I do think staff are putting before you a pretty solid recommendation that does do exactly what you're asking for, Commissioner. In those substantially increased units, doe harvest is extremely limited. And we can go through that here today.
Commissioner Spring, how do you feel?
I really want to thank the department for what has happened with the mule deer, because I think our mule deer has increased in a lot of areas, and we've went in the right direction there. But right now, I just don't want the mule deer herd getting knocked back because there's hardly any whitetails in some of those units. And when you got 600, 700, 800, 900 licenses in there, and there's very few whitetail, we're just starting to come back with the mule deer. Maybe I'm crazy, but I think we might knock our mule deer back what we've gained the last 2 years. That's just my speculation. But if we could go to a buck license in them bad units where the numbers are way down, I think it would be something beneficial to the deer herd.
Very good. Thank you. I would recommend that we continue to hear the remainder on this item, and then once we're done, Commissioner Spring, if you feel you want to bring a formal proposal after we've heard all of the agenda, then we can move at that time. With that, any other questions from the commission? Seeing none, very good. Thank you.
Good afternoon again, Madam Chair, Commissioner, Secretary Roebling, Andrew Norton, Wildlife Program Administrator. As was just discussed, I'll go through some of the recommended license changes here. The first item being just the license numbers themselves, and the second item would be a proposal in some areas to potentially get a little bit closer to what Commissioner Spring was suggesting. So the first is what the commission was presented with last month, preliminary license numbers, and there were a few changes. I'll get into those specifically, but first, to just back up a little bit, I do want to take a minute to acknowledge Byron and Andy and thank them. They put together that presentation in probably 2 weeks, what usually takes about 2 to 3 months to put together. So they've been scrambling and working like mad, and really appreciate that effort. One thing that I think cannot be overemphasized is the reliance on those objective maps. Andy mentioned it briefly that we probably should revisit those a little bit more. We're going to collect more data, but we also want to have that discussion earlier on rather than in an instance like right now where we can't really change objective maps at the last minute and get feedback from the public, commissioners, and all other stakeholders to really nail down those maps. Those are what quite literally drive the license numbers. So dark blue significantly increase. Yeah, there's probably good justification to reduce licenses, but some of those in between objective maps, that's where you might see a lot more antlerless licenses, and that's the result of, again, we go back to those objective maps, and that's the direction we'd like to go with the population. So one other thing to add from what Andy presented, even in the last, I would say, 24 months, we have taken several steps to reduce deer harvest, particularly in the southeast. That is essentially buck only. So last year, almost all of the units that we'll be discussing today were buck only. In fact, on the second page here, you can see the East River license numbers. Very few any whitetail licenses and very few antlerless whitetail, and the only ones that exist are a lot in northeastern South Dakota, not southeastern South Dakota. So the steps that we took last year were to reduce license numbers, and what I mentioned last month, which would be the recommendation, was to take another step further and statewide restrict archery hunters and muzzleloader hunters to buck only. So that's, again, a couple steps hopefully in the right direction towards what Commissioner Spring suggested. So no archery hunter can kill a doe in a unit with their previously would have been in any deer license. And then a few extra steps that we took in addition to Commissioner Spring, I believe you mentioned Unit 49A, or excuse me, West River Deer 49A. Maybe I'll focus on that quick to go through the license changes in West River. So two pages forward, I believe. Or Karina, are you moving it online, or do we move it here? So I'm not sure exactly what page it is, but it's the West River Deer license numbers. What I tried to do there was highlight the unit that Director Kirschman talked about last month was 49A. That would have been a change from originally staff felt that 250 any antlerless, or excuse me, any whitetail license plus an antlerless whitetail license in addition to 150 antlerless whitetail licenses would be what we would recommend in 49A. We backed off on that and changed that. Those 250 two-tag licenses that were any whitetail and any antlerless whitetail were now switched to just an any whitetail license. So 250 less whitetail doe licenses, if you will, in Unit 49A. In addition to that, there was some backing off in Unit 53C, Perkins County, the southern part of Perkins County. Same switch from those 250 two-tag licenses down to 250 single-tag license. So it'd be 250 fewer antlerless whitetail licenses there. In addition, there was double tag, so two doe licenses on private land only. Those were switched to single tag. So in essence, Perkins County, 350 fewer antlerless licenses. Those were the only change in the license numbers that would be before the commission today to finalize. A real quick review over East River Deer. The focus was on 12 units in southeastern South Dakota. In all of those units, licenses were either cut in half or reduced by 25%. Those were already buck only, so essentially no doe harvest. And the next agenda item would be maybe addressing that even further. But right now, as it stands with just the approval of these license numbers, the only remaining doe harvest in southeastern South Dakota would be from youth, mentor, apprentice, and landowner on land licenses. So with that, certainly can take any questions, but I might also ask if Director Kirschman has anything in addition, but there would be action needed to adopt these license numbers here today.
Madam Chair, thank you. Tom Kirschman, Director of Wildlife Division. So for Commissioner Spring and all commissioners, Andrew just went over some of the license adjustments for a couple of those units for the West River deer season, primarily switching some of those license types from a two-tag license to a single tag. Now, I think the next key item for discussion here before some of your action goes back to you, Commissioner Spring, and what you were just talking about a few moments ago, your thought and perspective of changing those units that are in substantially grow status, I think is what you're looking at. The dark blue to change those license types, the any deer to a buck only tag, correct? Am I understanding you correctly is what you were thinking or asking, sir?
Yeah, that was what I was thinking. And in A, there is some areas, I guess, that have quite a few deer. In B, it's not that way. But that's my proposal, especially with 49B, I would like to see a buck only license. If the department would go with that, that'd be great. I mean, and if the commission sees the way I do with it, but it's just, I'd like to see it come back. And I can't see how we can get it to come back any faster than not to have an any deer tag. Because an any deer tag, you know, with your report cards, what are you getting? 30% of the tag or people sending back? What are the other 70% doing? You don't know how many does are already killed. I don't know. I proposed for 49B to have a buck only. We'll see how far it goes.
We have a proposal from Commissioner Spring for Unit 49. A, was that correct?
B. 49B, correct.
49B for a buck only. That is a proposal. We would need a second on that. We have a second. So we have a motion for a buck only license. Conversation on that motion. Commissioner Bartling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner Bartling, may I ask then, will the number of tags still be, looks like around 700 tags?
Through the chair, Commissioner Bartley, and that's a great question. So where I was going to go next, if this was the desire of the commission to make that adjustment, as Commissioner Spring brought forward, we still have 100 licenses that are under the 11 type, which isn't any whitetail. And as it's been mentioned already, again, the licenses that are allocated by unit looks in the totality of all the parameters and all the information that Andy and Byron went through. And again, with deer not being completely evenly distributed across these hunting units that you have listed here, that's why some of those license allocations are still there. We are still seeing some growth, albeit we want to see that grow faster and continue those conversations. So I guess what I was going to offer up, Madam Chair, is if there is a desire by you, the commissioners, with a couple of these other units, and sorry, if we could get that unit map back up for Whitetail. If there is the interest and desire to make a few more adjustments to the buck only and a couple of other units, as Commissioner Spring had suggested to all of you, I guess I was going to ask, Madam Chair, if I could have the opportunity then to go back and visit with staff this afternoon, this evening, to talk about these other license types that, as this example we just talked about, isn't 100 whitetail or any whitetail, which includes doe harvest also, or the potential for doe harvest. I want to make sure that all these other license types in some of these units, if we make this change, if they're still kosher and good without just making a quick adjustment without having the opportunity to visit with staff, if that would be kosher to you. I was seeing if we could put up that objective map, because we do have a couple other units in Western South Dakota, West River Deer, South Dakota. Commissioner Bartling, 30A down in Gregory is, there you go, if you can see that. And then we have 60A, which would be Tripp County, if we want to make that type of adjustment. But then again, we also have 600 any whitetail for that. And so I want to make sure that if we're going to make this type of adjustment, that all the other license types that our staff worked on and put together based on what we know is happening in those units makes sense to, do we then have to consider others? And I want to make sure we have that type of conversation before you would make a final decision. Now, I'll be very upfront and honest with you too. We are going to ask for a finalization of these at this meeting, because we need to start building and having our final license types in for the combined deer draw, which is going to be coming up very, very soon to get applications out. So I might be asking, if okay with you, Madam Chair and Commissioners, if you want to make a few of these additional adjustments that give us the opportunity to at least visit tonight and have the opportunity to visit with some key staff on this.
I appreciate that. Any comments from commissioners? Commissioner Whitmire.
Commissioner Whitmire, thank you, Madam Chair. One thought is, you know, you folks sometimes deal with urban deer specifically issues, and I think archery is a opportunity on that. Just as you're reviewing these things, I guess just to ask, just to kind of vet that whole thing to make sure we're not limiting some of the tools that you might have, and I trust that that's probably already been a consideration, but just wanted to make sure we're not limiting, you know, what you guys can do to handle possible depredation issues, you know, that kind of thing.
Thank Appreciate you. That, Commissioner Whitmire. So if I look at this map and the primary question right now, especially in the western part of the state that Commissioner Spring is discussing, so 49B, and then we have the three units down in 27, so 27A, B, and L there. That's the limited one, so those we would look at. And then, as I just mentioned, Tripp, two units in Lyman County, Jones County, and then Millett County and Todd County. And again, in Todd County. So I'd just like the opportunity to visit with staff if that's something of your desire, to look at those buck only licenses, but also what does that mean for some of the other license types?
Madam Chair.
Commissioner Spring.
You know, you have it on the maps that those numbers are way down in those dark areas. Why would you have doe tags in an area where numbers are way down? I just don't understand the comprehension of that. I mean, if you're trying to build the deer herd up, why do you have 100 doe tags in the unit that you're trying to build the numbers back? It don't make any sense to me at all.
Yeah, through the chair and Commissioner Spring. So an example where we have 100 licenses, they're in any whitetail. So it's not necessarily a doe tag, but it could have the opportunity to harvest a doe on that. In some of those situations and scenarios, it's more about some of those opportunities for landowners making some decisions on their property as well, whether they obtain the license or somebody that has that license and obtains permission. There might be a desire by some of that landowner, depending where they are in that unit, as we talked about, not evenly distributed, to provide or offer the opportunity for the harvest of a doe. We do know from our harvest data that the number of does harvested by them are low, and each unit's a little bit different. Totally understand that, but typically on those any whitetail or an any deer, the doe harvest itself is extremely low to begin with. And from a biological standpoint, those few numbers are not having an impact on the opportunity for deer to grow. So that's why those license types are in there in some of those scenarios.
Secretary Roebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess to more bluntly answer the question, we manage deer populations at the unit level, not at the ranch level, and that's how biologists quantify then growth rates and overall abundance within that unit. So we do not carve out areas within the unit that might have fewer deer than various areas in the unit that have more deer. And there is no even distribution of deer across any unit. It's all dependent on habitat. It's all dependent upon a lot of different variables. So that is why you'll see in some of these units where we're trying to substantially increase the herd, there are still pockets of deer that we need to put some harvest pressure on.
Additional questions, comments from the commission? Commissioner Cole, please.
The motion that I seconded, I was under the impression that I seconded a motion to make a unit buck only, but I didn't think that the motion was made on a specific number. Could somebody tell me what the motion was and what actually happened?
I think I'm going to look to the attorney, but I would offer that what you interpreted was correct.
That's okay.
Yes.
So I think now that I've got that clear, I think what we should do is exactly what our director of wildlife suggested. And if there's other counties that we want to look at, it's easy to handle that. I just wanted to make sure we weren't, because immediately when you started saying that it's whatever that number was, 900, I'm smart enough to figure out if you make that all buck only, we just threw a curve at everything. I'm only assuming that, correct? Okay, so I think we need to get that back in their hands as soon as we can.
I would agree. I don't feel comfortable moving forward on the motion that is on the table. I don't know if it would be best, and I'll look to our staff attorney, if we could table this at the moment to allow the department to look at all that they need to look at. And then if we feel we need to pull it off the table tomorrow, we can. If we don't, we can let it die.
So, Madam Chair, we will go back and have some additional conversations this afternoon and this evening and come back to you tomorrow morning, if that works, to have that discussion on these handful of units that have been brought up for this discussion purpose.
Very good. I appreciate that. So then, Director Kirschman, as we look at the other items that we need to vote on today, how does that impact our movement?
So your next action sheet that Andrew's going to cover has to do with some of the mentor and youth hunting down in southeast South Dakota. I think we could go ahead and proceed with that because that won't have a bearing on that conversation of these other license types. So, Andrew, maybe you can go over the information details on that action sheet. This would be an actual proposal recommendation for you.
So if I could, before we move there, I want to put to rest where we were with the proposal that's in front of us, because I cannot make a motion to table it. So I'd like some conversation from the commission.
As Commissioner Spring, I would like Tom to have the time to look this over tonight with the rest of the administration and bring it back tomorrow. And we'll let the motion that I had just set for now, and maybe they can bring up some numbers that'll work good. And I don't want to slow this process down, but I really think we need some change. Thank you.
Yes, please.
I'll make a motion that we table the motion, but we continue with the information on it.
Very good. We need a second. Seconded by Commissioner Bartling. Comments or questions on that? Seeing none, all those in favor of voting of tabling the motion until tomorrow, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed. So we will hold that motion until tomorrow. Very good. So I apologize. Please.
Madam Chair, Commissioner, Secretary Roebling, Andrew Norton, Wildlife Program Administrator, and here to discuss a potential proposal that, again, would maybe move a little bit closer towards this buck-only concept. First, would like to back up and just explain what potential buck harvest could even occur. So the changes we'd make before are just to license numbers for West River deer, East River deer, and license types. So currently on the table, the special buck seasons, East River, West River, applications are already out, so probably a little bit too late to make those buck only. We do have landowner-owned land licenses, East River and West River, and those allow the landowner an option to have an any deer or a two-tag license in any deer plus in any antlerless deer. Those are for all West River or all East River, and that would be in that previous action sheet. And then the one other license type that this proposal will address specifically is youth mentor apprentice deer. In most units, especially East River, we see the majority of the remaining antlerless harvest occurring on those licenses. So for example, a lot of those southeastern units, they're buck-only licenses. There are no does harvested there with the exception of an unlimited harvest from youth, mentor, and apprentice. So this recommendation, again, just restricted to southeastern South Dakota, would get specifically at that. And just a quick summary, apprentice deer is an individual that hasn't had a deer license in South Dakota for 10 years. The intent is to get some of those older hunters that may want to get into hunting an opportunity to harvest a doe. Youth is 12 to 18 years old with Hunt Safe, and mentored is 15 years or younger without Hunt Safe with a mentor with them. So they're all opportunities to get young kids or people that don't hunt very much a very easy opportunity to go out and harvest an antlerless deer. And that's obviously germane to this discussion today, that in areas where we don't want to harvest any female deer, it is at odds with the objective to significantly increase. As Byron and Andy presented, we can't significantly increase with the youth and landowner harvest in these southeastern counties. We just literally can't. It's too much harvest with such low deer numbers and 255 deer that are harvested in 9 particular counties in southeastern South Dakota. So what this recommendation that the department would have is to remove over half of the remaining doe harvest in 9 counties in southeastern South Dakota. That would be Yankton, Davison, Bonham, Clay, Hanson, Hutchinson, Lincoln, Turner, and Union. This would be a substantial change for our department. A few years ago, we limited youth, mentor, and apprentice to whitetail only in about 2/3 of the state, and we heard a lot from our hunting community that we're limiting opportunity for these individuals that we want to get into hunting. So one perspective would be that individuals have to wait maybe 1 or 2 years to hunt, or they have to travel further to hunt, which could impact recruitment of hunters. But the other way you could look at it is we're saving 255 deer. That equates to 3,000 deer 4 years down the road. Byron presented in those areas we might have 5 to 10,000 deer in 4 years. This is another 3,000. So we get there quite a bit faster if we can save 255 deer every year for 4 years, which is what this proposal would do. So the perspective there would be, yes, we're going to limit opportunity for these apprentice hunters, these youth hunters, and these mentor hunters. And that's a hard pill to swallow. Me having a 12-year-old, a 13-year-old, and a 2-year-old, I'd love to get them out there hunting. But they're not going to be good hunters if they think going out there in the field is an opportunity to guaranteed to kill a doe every year. The perspective that Commissioner Spring shared is probably a better way to look at conservation, that sometimes you can't just go out and harvest a deer every year, and you may have to wait 1 or 2 years, or you may have to travel 2 hours. But that's kind of going to be where the rub lies here, is that this is going to very definitely limit youth, mentor, apprentice hunting opportunity in 9 counties in southeastern South Dakota. And many of our users may be landowners with 100 deer that frequent their property from time to time. They may be frustrated that their son, their daughter may not be able to hunt. So just quick, specifically, figure one, I think, did we lose Commissioner or Chris advancing the slides, Karina? Yeah, there's figure one in the top left that shows those specific counties that I mentioned. The unit numbers for those are 07A, 07B, 08A, 12A, 12B, 19A, 34A, 37A, 44A, 61A and 62A. So as you can see, there's a void down there. There'd be no essentially recruitment hunting opportunity in that part of the state. And that would be the department's recommendation in that area that probably different than a lot of the other state has just been hit with drought. It's been hit with this severe winter in 2022. And it's also been hit with back-to-back and hopefully not a third year of hemorrhagic disease here this fall. So with that, can take any questions. Looks like Director Kirschman might have a comment.
Madam Chair, if I may just add a couple other comments to what Andrew just talked about. Again, I want to reiterate a couple of key points to this particular proposal as well, that we had discussions about looking at developing this proposal. Number one, the information that we have right now and the information that Andy and Byron showed you on some of those graphs, we do believe, and everything would indicate, that we do have growth in the deer numbers in that southeast area. Albeit small, there is growth. And so by adding this additional stipulations of removing this doe harvest is a mechanism to get there a little bit faster. We're not suggesting or saying that the youth hunting of does in this area is the number one blame for what's happening of the low deer numbers and the long time it is taking to get it to going to that growth status. Growth is happening, but we've certainly heard the message from hunters and landowners, and you could see it in the graphs. The belief there is they're way too low, right? And they're either extremely low or they're getting close to the low end of about being right. This is a means, this is a mechanism to hopefully get there faster. Now, there's nothing that we can predict and control of what the weather's going to do or EHD. Unfortunately, this has been an area that has been struck multiple times by EHD and has not helped us in respect to the numbers rebounding. Can't predict what it's going to be again, but by implementing this, what we do offer, though, is that it will help and hopefully help get there a little bit faster is the ultimate goal on this. We recognize and understand that some of those opportunities will be lost there. Again, I want to make it perfectly clear that when we talk about youth deer licenses and mentor deer licenses, they are a statewide or up in that northwest corner of the state type license. So if somebody does want to still get out and enjoy the opportunity or have that opportunity of a youth deer or a mentor deer, they could obtain a license even if they live down there. It will require going to a different hunting unit or a different county for the opportunity to potentially harvest a doe. So it doesn't completely eliminate somebody from doing that. It eliminates that opportunity in that area down in the southeast. Do we anticipate this being a permanent thing? We certainly hope not, that it will not be. Now, is it going to be 1 year, 2 year? We're not going to sit here and say that today, that this is the definitive timeline before we would re-implement that. But I just wanted to share a couple of those key comments because I think they're very critical in understanding that in the consideration of this and for the folks listening in that will have an interest in this as well.
Very good. Thank you both for that. Questions from the commission?
Comments.
Commissioner Cole?
Yeah, obviously, this is right in this R3 area right here. You start talking about eliminating youth licenses, it's really tough. But I think that I don't have a choice but to support this because I think it's the only outcome that can get to where we need to be. The one thing I would add, and looking at this, I'd really like to take a look at what our options are to inform the landowners in those counties that are affected by this so that they aren't doing what's in the best interest of what we're trying to do, or not doing it, I should say, which is shooting does. And I think most people are going to understand that, but I think it's really a communication that needs to be had with them because it's a big step. The good part of this is that we're a mobile society now and they don't have a long ways to go. The youth do, so, you know, it's going to be a hardship for some of them maybe, but it's I don't think we have any other alternative. So I'm in support of what I hear right now. So thank you for what you've done.
Additional comments from the commission? And or questions? I would just follow in line with what Commissioner Cole said. I'm down in Clay County, the Vermilion area, And I know it's a difficult decision to make, and conversations have been many among you and your staff, and I appreciate your efforts to help bring these herds back, so thank you for that.
Madam Chair, and just again for clarification, this is a recommendation for a proposal, so should you adopt this, then this would go out for public comment with the intent of finalization at your next commission meeting on June 11th in Madison.
So with that, commissioners, if we have no other questions and or comments, we do need a motion and a second. Motion to approve by Commissioner Nyberg. Was that a second by Commissioner Bartling? Comments on that motion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? It is approved. It will move forward as a proposal with finalization in Madison in June. Very good. All right. With that, I'd like to take a 10-minute break.